is on the radio today. So turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday. It's April 8th. It's 2024. And I'll guarantee you one thing. This show will not be eclipsed by any other show. It's that good. There is so much to do, so much to talk about. Peter fresh off his triumphant WrestleMania. Don's wearing his eclipse glasses if you're not watching on Yes right now. I'm at Yankee Stadium in a trailer, really a storage bin, so I will not see the eclipse at all. How you guys doing?
I'm good. It's actually fun. We pulled the kids out of school early so that they can appreciate what was going on. Nancy got the glasses, as you can see, and I cannot see a thing. You don't see anything but the sun with these things on, so I'm going to take them off. But right now, it looks like a crescent moon, the sun. And wow. Within the next, I think, 26 minutes, at least our area, we'll see 90% of the sun obscured by the moon, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not getting excited about it like most people. I don't know about you, Peter. Oh. I mean, okay, I've seen the moon, I've seen the sun. Okay.
I'm not like, you guys all scoffed at me the other day when I asked the question. I'm not like sure what we're expected to get here. Is this just supposed to be like a, you get like that little crescent shot where you can
no,
see
it'll
that
be like
the,
dark. It'll be night. It'll be very dark. But
no.
Well, that's not exciting. If it simply just gets dark and light, obviously to me that's
that
not
won't
exciting.
Even happen.
And that's not even happening here. It's happening like in Buffalo.
If you're in the path of what is the phrase totality, as they love to throw out, it will get dark. But for us, even the 10% of sun is enough to make it feel like a cloud has passed by it. So we will not all of a sudden become nighttime and then become day. It's kind of
I don't even care.
I'm good. At the glasses and it's cool. And, you know, I think I described it aptly. It's pretty cool. Kids are excited about it. That gets me excited about it. But it's pretty cool. It's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, my wife got the glasses for the kids and I put them on last night. You're right, Don. You can't see anything.
Anything.
Nothing. Like if you look at the light in your house, you can't see it. Well, then that means it's working. So you're not supposed to see much because you don't want your eyeballs burned.
But I will say this, though, because what was the temperature today? Like around 60? It wasn't that warm. But while this was all happening, like directly in sunlight, it really felt warm. And we had to put some lotion on the kids, some sunscreen on, because it looked like they were starting to get red. So there was that aspect to it. But, you know, it's pretty cool. It was
I'm curious, Don. Nancy put any lotion on you anywhere?
No.
No? Okay. It's not an anniversary. I'm sorry. What was I saying?
Michael, come on. It's an eclipse, but it's not an anniversary.
I mean, listen, the timing of the next
often,
one.
Don, what happens more often, an eclipse?
Yeah, right,
or
exactly. Well, you got another one's coming in 20 years. And listen, that would be a nice little streak for me.
Yeah, but it lines up perfectly.
And listen, have twins, Peter, and you'll see. You'll see.
I'd have no judgment for it whatsoever. You've just now put it out in the ether.
No, because so that's why this show separates itself from others. We lay it
that's
all
right.
out there.
That's why we can't be eclipsed.
But you know what? Like, you know, if you and Natalie have twins, your erotic moments will be, you know, napping on the couch between feeding.
I hope
and
they
between,
have triplets.
I don't think it requires twins. I think a lot of people listening could say
well, marriage.
I think they'd say marriage. They'd say any children.
Marriage is
they'd
a great
say,
birth control. Right. It really is.
Marriage is the donut on the on deck circle, and then you have kids, and they just take the bat from you.
Almost literally. All right, so there's a lot of stuff that went on. Caitlin Clark ends her college career with a loss to South Carolina. She had an unbelievable first quarter. I think she wore down a little bit. They really played pretty good defense on her. But, I mean, the final four game that she played against UConn, I mean, over 14 million people watched. So that was more than any NBA final game last year, any Major League Baseball World Series game, any Masters, any bit. I mean, it is a thing now. It really is. You can debate whether she's great or not. You know what I don't like? All these former players, like, hating on her. Well, why? What's all the hate?
Listen,
she's getting so much attention?
What are they saying, though? I mean, what are you
Well, she's not as good. You know, let's see when she goes to, I think it was Diana Taurasi. Wait till she goes to the WNBA. She's playing against girls now. Then she's going to play against women. Well, what great player goes to the NBA and doesn't struggle in his first year? I mean, it's an adjustment.
But I don't think it's beyond analysis. Like, see, this is where I get like a little upset sometimes. It's like if anybody has anything to say, they want to analyze it the way she did, or then you're coming across as a hater. No, I mean, I just think that there's a lot of people that are parachuting in. What I compare with this phenomenon of her and the numbers that the Final Four got on the women's side, I kind of compare it to like the Olympics. It becomes like a thing. You know, when Michael Spitz was winning medal after medal after medal in the early 70s, or what we saw from Michael Phelps recently, it becomes like must-watch television for a lot of people that may not be experts on that particular sport. And then an expert comes in and just throws out, well, let's see what she does when she gets to the pros and has to elevate to that level. That's to balance out what Peter was talking about how we build people up almost too much, where how many points would she score in an NBA game? Like, so it's okay to balance and analyze that and not look like a hater when you do that. Now, if you're going to say, I don't watch or I don't care, that's a different story. But if you want to analyze it like an actual sporting event, which it is, don't come across as a hater if it's a little negative.
I know, but I hear what Michael's saying in the sense that this Caitlin Clark conversation's been a weird one. Like, she is so clearly dominant.
Right.
She is so clearly iconic. And there just seems to be at every turn a little bit of like a, well, let's not forget about so-and-so. Well, blah, blah.
And it's men that are doing it. It's like, you know, Diana Taurasi. I mean, they had like an NCAA Women's Final Four cast. And, you know, they're not showering her with love. They're just not.
But listen, I don't know what the motivation is, Peter. You know, maybe it is something that's really coming across as negative, and then maybe there is hate behind it. But I just think it balances out the wacky stuff of how many points would she score in an NBA game, or is she the greatest athlete of all time? Like, why does everything have to? Why can't we just break it down like a sporting event, which it is? See, that's the thing, is that when women are striving for equality, the point is that this is important, and it could be broken down just like anything else.
No,
does she have to win the championship?
You.
Wouldn't that be the conversation if there was a man that was dominating?
Yeah,
couldn't
we throw that out? But what Peter and I are saying, I can't speak for Peter, but I think this is it. She's so clearly great that, I mean, people are really picking at these small little things. I mean, she's great.
Well, welcome to sports, man. That's what we do, right?
But they didn't do that to Patrick Ewing or Michael Jordan. They just didn't.
Yeah, Don, you're like, to me, you're making it two separate things. I have no issue with someone saying, oh, man, it is a dagger that she did not get that championship. Like, that is something that is a real disappointment. And now maybe we look at whether or not I get that part. But it doesn't even seem prior to the championship game this has been happening.
But this happened to Tim Tebow, right? Like, will he be able to translate to the NFL? And people saying when he did have that overtime victory in the playoffs against the Steelers that he's going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. And then people saying, well, wait a minute, let's see when it really gets elevated whether he's going to be that good of a quarterback. That's what we do in sports. And I think that's a good thing. Is that this is legitimate. You know, women's athletics is legitimate. And now it gets put on a platform where we get a chance to talk about it. And guys, this is the way we talk about sports.
But I don't understand what you're saying. Michael and I aren't saying... Michael, are you allowed to
break her down.
But don't come across as saying it's about gender, anybody that does that's a hater.
But you're making it sound like the reason Michael and I are saying this is because she's a woman and that's... I'm not saying that. I'm talking about Caitlin Clark, the individual, seems to be at random times getting held to a weird standard considering how obviously dominant she is. That's all. I'm not saying it's because of her gender.
A lot of criticism to me, it comes especially from women that play in the WNBA and the ones that are analyzing, although Rebecca Lobo on the main broadcast didn't do this. It came off to me, well, we were great. Why didn't we get this kind of love? That's all I'm saying, Don. You're allowed to break down. You're right. That's part of equality.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But there just seems to be a lot of envy in what they're saying.
I'm just coming from a place where it just seems like if anybody's critical, they get deemed a hater, and I don't think that's fair. Now, there's a lot of hate that goes on, and I'm sure that a lot of these women that were great in the past that didn't get the same attention might be a little jealous. Maybe they're a little envious. I don't know exactly where their criticism might be coming from. That's like anything else. It happens in sports radio all the time. Oh, Michael, you're just saying that because you're a Yankee boy. Or Don, you're just saying that because you work for the Rangers. Like, there's always that. But I just think that if we're really getting to the point where there is an equality, well, then this kind of comes with it. This is sports. This is how it always gets broken down. And I'll be interested to see how she transforms to that. Now, these numbers are pretty incredible. They're like Olympic numbers, right? Now we'll see how that all translates when she joins the WNBA and all that. I'm sure it's going to cool down, but you can't tell me this isn't going to be a major bump for the WNBA for sure.
Well, and you know what? From a storyline standpoint, I don't hate that she didn't get the championship. Because she is the better player than Angel Reese, but now Angel Reese is the one who has the championship. I sort of like it for their rivalry going into the WNBA.
All right, the Knicks with a really nice win yesterday. They're one game out of second now. They're tied for third with Orlando, although Orlando, I believe, has the tiebreaker. I don't want to take away from the win. It's a great win against Milwaukee in Milwaukee. They've got issues, man. They had no chance to stop Jalen Brunson yesterday. The Knicks are gritty. They play hard. But just because they beat Milwaukee in a game that they had to win, remember, they lost to Chicago. So let's see how they do in their next game against Chicago. It's still very much in flux in the Eastern Conference, but I'm still not convinced. Well, they beat Milwaukee. Now they have a chance to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. I still don't see it. I don't see it. I just don't. But well, that's a nice win. It's hard to take away from it.
That's the problem with the NBA is does what happens on an April 7th game translate to how they would end up playing in a best of seven series? Now, you're right. The Bucks have issues for sure. But we see this in all sports, like where one team needs it a little bit more than the other. And sometimes that's enough to make it look like the team that's lesser in the standings is actually the better team. Let's see how it all plays out once we get to the playoffs. But I don't know. Would you pick the Knicks over the Bucks in a best of seven series with all their issues?
I might.
You have to think about it,
right? And they have the best player
in
Antetokounmpo, but I believe that the Knicks could beat. I just don't think that team plays defense.
They don't. But I'm not going to judge it on what happened last night, per se. But listen, they need the games. The Knicks play. What happened the second of back-to-backs was killer against the Bulls.
I'll tell you what, though. I believe the number was 31-13 under Adrian Griffin. They're a 500 team with Doc. So that doesn't look like that was a smart move. Rangers with a big weekend. Islanders with a big weekend. So got to give kudos. Rangers are getting close, right, to clinching the presidency?
They are. There's four games left. They've got a five-point lead on Carolina for the division, a three-point lead on Boston for the conference. And that is going to be an epic game tomorrow at UBS because the Islanders have everything breaking their way with the way Washington's played and certainly the way Philadelphia's played, where they moved into third place in the Metro. They've also won four straight. Give them credit to shut out Nashville the other night. So the Islanders are desperate for a win, and the Rangers, with a victory tomorrow, that'll be the most wins they've ever had in franchise history in one season. And if they win, they'll be just a point shy of the most points ever. And Panarin has just been unreal. 115 points now on the season.
I call him Brad Dunn.
Well, and a lot of other people call him Bread, too.
Good.
And he's been money as well for this team down the stretch. So I just want the playoffs. For both the Knicks and the Rangers, guys, this is all fun. Who are they going to play? Who do you want to play? I really think the postseason is going to be fun. I just wish it would get started already, right? I mean, it's nice to have these games to get ready. But, God, I really have a feeling this is going to be a very fun spring at the Garden. I just want to get it started.
So we have a national championship game tonight. We like to call it the Natty. UConn's trying to make it two in a row. First college to go two in a row in men's basketball since Florida back, I think, in 2007. And it's a good matchup between Purdue and UConn. But I thought the tougher matchup for UConn in the Final Four was going to be against Alabama. And I think Alabama played very, very tough. But then UConn's just too much. They came out firing in the second half. It was close at the half. For a while there, Alabama was leading. So I just think UConn has the goods. But the Battle of Big Men is going to be something to watch tonight. So I can't wait. It should be fun, but I think UConn's going to win. And I said at the beginning of the Field of 68, give me UConn. You guys could take – anybody else could take the field. And so far it's played out. UConn's just great. They're great.
Now, they were talking about this morning on DNR. As you know, Calipari's left Kentucky to go to Arkansas.
Amazing.
If you're Hurley, you win the national championship second in a row, if you're offered the Kentucky job, do you take it?
I might, although he's from the area, so he might want, but, you know, being in stores is not being in Jersey.
No.
So he might take it.
And it's big.
I thought of another weird thing. If you're Kentucky, would you go out to Pitino? Pitino was beloved there. The only reason Pitino left is because he got that an unbelievable offer to be the Red Auerbach of the Celtics. He was the president and the coach. He loved Kentucky. Now, I know he's in the 70s, so that's certainly pulls away. A lot of people saying they should go after Nate Oates, the Alabama coach. I mean, in Kentucky, you gotta have a big star. So Danny Hurley's a big star, Don. I think I would go if I were him.
I don't understand.
Because he'd probably get $9 million a year.
I don't understand the logic of what. Money alone? I mean, how much is he making at UConn?
Well, wait a
I'm sure he makes a lot of money, but Kentucky is like, the Yankees, Celtics.
No,
it's the premier college program.
Listen, you've already accomplished a lot at UConn. All right, so you kind of been there, done that. But Kentucky's Kentucky. I know what you're saying. UConn is also become a blue blood, and it's a destination and all that, but there's a draw about Kentucky, not just about the money, but it's Kentucky.
I know, but that's like, this is like the whole idea is exactly what's wrong with college sports today. I mean, so what? You're building something special at a really big school.
Yeah, but what more can he do there? If he wins tonight, what more can he do, Peter?
What is there to do at Kentucky?
They haven't won a championship in forever.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's all the same thing. Like, okay, if it's a huge amount of money, I understand people making decisions for money. Although, let's be honest, guys, the Hurleys are, I think they're going to be okay. So I just don't understand. So just to get your ego, more checks on your ego, showing you can win?
Yeah.
I'm trying to
but
find
But that's horrible. Why would we ever endorse that? I mean, that would be disgusting. Like, that's filth to me. You built. Now you're at UConn, and you're turning them into a thing. And the second you've proven you can do it back-to-back, all right, take care. That would be awful.
But I don't think that's the motivation. It's just that Kentucky's a draw. Now, I don't know. I can't get into his head and whether he cares as much about it, but there's just certain teams that it becomes a bit of an attraction. And as much as we love UConn and what they've accomplished, don't you think winning at Kentucky is just like almost like a notch above just because it's Kentucky? Like Michael said, there's the Canadians, there's the Yankees, there's the Celtics. Like there's certain
teams. But it's in
teams.
Kentucky. But like you're also going to Kentucky. I mean, there are things to remember.
Hurley signed a 6-year $32 million deal in June. Now, that doesn't mean anything. I'm sure there's a buyout, which Kentucky could buy out. So 6 into 32, he's only making a little over $5 million a year.
Oh.
You know, Calipari just left $8.5 million a year. And he's probably going to make more in Arkansas because of the Tyson Chicken people.
To me, while Kentucky is a very special place, is it that it's that far above the way you think of UConn?
Listen, I love the UConn program, and Jim Calhoun stayed there forever. Kevin Ollie had a short stay, but that was for other issues. And then Danny Hurley's done everything that you could ever ask anybody to do. So, I mean, everybody's looking for more challenges, Peter. And maybe you have so much more of an infrastructure at Kentucky where, I mean, they've got so much money that they can get any NIL player, anybody.
I don't want to sit there. Now, would I do it? I don't know, but I don't want to paint him a bad guy if all of a sudden he has an out in his contract that Kentucky's willing to double. And then, but they might, Michael, right? I mean, who knows? They might offer him $10 million, and you could double your salary and go to an epic program, and it's not like you're leaving UConn in the dust. I mean, if they win tonight back-to-back titles, you're not leaving them in a lurch at all. And hey, listen, I think it'd be great if he stayed, and I'd admire that. I hear what you're saying, Peter, but you can't ignore the draw, not just financially, but also going to a school like that hasn't won in a while.
Well, it's game time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. Yankees take on the Marlins at the stadium with first pitch at 6:05. That'll be on YES. And the Mets are in Atlanta, the Battle of the Braves at 7:20, and that's on SNY. That's game time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey, because when it's game time, it's Tully time. Tullamore Dew, the original triple distilled, triple blended, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Be sure to grab a Tullamore Dew or try the brand new Tullamore Dew Honey during tonight's action. Glasses up to enjoying Tullamore Dew responsibly. Yankees playing tonight, as I mentioned, at 6. So I have the starting lineup already. I know you guys have been waiting for this on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Gleyber Torres leads off, plays second base, Juan Soto in right, Aaron Judge in center. The DH, Giancarlo Stanton, will clean up. Batting fifth, playing first base, Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Volpe hitting over 400. He'll be the shortstop. Batting sixth, batting seventh, still trying to find it offensively. Left fielder, Alex Verdugo. Jose Trevino will be behind the plate, batting eighth and batting ninth, and playing third base, it's John Birdie. The pitcher for the Yankees is Nestor Cortez. That's tonight's Yankees starting lineup, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea, a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of the New York Yankees. I want the guy who called up on Friday, who wanted the Yankees to release Stanton, I want him to call up. Now, I'm not saying that Stanton is over the hump. He's going to have a great year. But you keep people around because you hope that something can click in. And he had three hits on Saturday. He had a massive grand slam yesterday. So does your opinion change? And do people even realize to this point, guys, baseball is like a stew. It's not a microwave sport. You cannot make decisions on 6 or 7 games. It's irresponsible. And especially when you owe the guy $98 million. You're not just going to cut bait that quickly. Fans might want to do it, but they don't own the business. Congratulations to the Mets. They took 2 of 3 in Cincinnati. And this is something that we're going to get into a lot in the 4 o'clock hour. And it's something that bothers me quite a bit. Francisco Lindor's been awful. He's been awful the first however many games they've played. I think he has one hit. He's been horrendous. On social media, people are sending messages to his wife saying, hoping death and severe hurt on the family and the children as well. This is what being a public figure is about. That's why staying off of the mentions in social media, probably the way to go, because these people are cowards anyway. They could threaten death, and if they ever ran into Francisco Lindor, they'd ask for a selfie. But I'm of the opinion that if there's any kind of death threat or anything like that, that it's incumbent upon Instagram and it's incumbent upon Elon Musk and X to unearth those people and have them arrested. They should have ramifications for words like that. They really should. Now, it was suggested on social media that, you know, a Met fan should give Francisco Lindor a standing ovation when they get back home on Friday. Steve Cohen, the owner, said that that's a great idea. But we'll see if it happens. But it's the ugly side of sports, guys. And I'm telling you what, we read ads for gambling sites. Everybody's gambling now. So if you make an out, you're costing somebody money. If you're losing a game, you're costing somebody money, much more than you used to. When the only people that gamble when they had illegal bookies. Now, you got a phone, you got a chance to put down a bet. And I think people get upset when they're losing money and they say really terrible things.
It's people are so pathetic. I mean, it's just, and don't get me wrong, I don't know. I wonder what point you consider it like a credible, quote, threat. But either way, who on earth thinks to do that?
Because they get excited off of what's just transpired right now. That's why I'm hesitant to talk about it, because I think it's worth an open. I mean, Steve Phillips used to tell me when I worked with him the death threats he got when he was the general manager of the team. And I'm thinking, do you really think that you're a better fan than me because you're willing to threaten somebody's life because they play poorly? Or are you just a moron?
No, you belong in an asylum.
But you're sitting there and you're probably watching Yes or SNY and hearing it talked about, and you'll never accomplish anything in your life. You know, so this is like the biggest highlight that you can move the needle like this. And I feel like we're giving them the time because these are people, this is the most they'll ever accomplish in their life. That's why they do it, Michael, to just get some sort of attention.
That's why there have to be ramifications, Don.
They don't even get the attention because they don't have their name on it. But the fact that they talk about it and they can tell their friends, look, they're talking about something I did. But if there were ramifications, never mind getting a selfie if they saw Lindor. They'd probably soil themselves if they ever saw them. But just know, the person that's out there that's all excited is being talked about, how does it feel to know you'll never accomplish anything in your life?
Yeah, you'll never get to the height that Francisco Lindor, who's failing at this point this year. You'll never even get close to what he's done in his life.
The only time you'll get your name in the paper is your obituary. Sad.
Well, not necessarily. Someone has to do that.
Yeah, that is.
All right.
It doesn't happen.
Let's take a brief time out because we're going to talk some football when we get back. Adam Schefter's going to join us, a rare Schefty interview. And then people are lined up to have phone calls. It's also a big day on the show because we crown our champion, too, Drop Madness, Screaming Don against Griffin.
That's so
it's going to be interesting to see how the vote goes.
So there's no substance to that drop. It's just me screaming.
Peter,
it was an epic rant.
Well, can you remind us real quick, before we go to break, can you remind us of who's going to be competing starting at
420?
Cut his fat ass!
You know what?
Wow. I think Don's going to win.
I don't appreciate being devalued, though.
Yeah, he will not devalue this man.
Do you believe there's more to that than screaming, Peter? That's all I'm asking.
Well, the moment was more. The drop itself is screaming, but there was more in the moment.
But you don't think people are voting for it because of where it came from?
No. I think that's no. Well, they have no idea where it came from. They just know that you're screaming at the top of your lungs.
All right. I know my role now. Okay. I'm sorry.
Boy's ass!
Adam Schefter next.
During the break, and I'll be better.
I told you that my home needed a refresh, so I chose the painting professionals at CertaPro Painters. They're working now, and CertaPro Painters treats my home with as much care as I would. Truly, they're great. They have protected my floors and the carpeting on my staircase. Everything is clean and handled with extreme care, including the scaffolding that they needed to use to reach everything up high. They were unbelievable with that. They take pride in what they do, and you could trust them to get the job done right. Now's the time to do the home painting project that you've been putting off. Why wait? From now through April 30th, CertaPro Painters is running its spring sales event. Special offers are available at participating locations. Each CertaPro Painters business is independently owned and operated by men and women who live in our community. They're a local business that you can support. Schedule your free estimate online at CertaPro.com. That's Certa with a C. When choosing a painting professional for your home or business, the choice is simple. Choose happy. Choose CertaPro Painters.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
We always love talking to this guy. He is the best of the best when it comes to football. Joining us now, ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter to talk all things NFL draft and his work with, Sanofi's One Pledge movement. So before we get to something mundane like football, Adam, Let's talk about what is Sanofi's One Pledge movement.
Well, Michael, it's Sanofi, and I appreciate you asking. Thank you very much. And basically, my wife is a type 1 diabetic, and so it's very important for me to have people go out and get screened for type 1 diabetes as a spokesperson for Sanofi. And I want them to visit their doctor, be screened for type 1. Their doctor can order a blood test that can detect type 1 diabetes, and that way they can discuss the results and come up with a care plan if somebody should test positive. But it's such a challenging disease. I watch my wife deal with it every single day. We want people to go out and go to the onepledge.com for more information. The One Pledge, like the One Pledge.com for more information so they and their family members can be screened for type 1 diabetes and be proactive rather than reactive.
Now, I know a lot of people get confused about this, so I want you to explain to our audience. Type 2 diabetes is when people have high sugar. They might have to take medicine to bring it down, but type 1 is different, right?
Type 1 is different. Type 1 is an autoimmune disease, and basically the best way to describe it is think of your body as a castle. And think about the army inside the castle protecting the castle. Well, in this particular case, if you had type 1, it would be as if the army was fighting itself inside the castle, destroying the castle rather than protecting the castle. That's what it is. Type 1 is a much more severe form of it. It's a significant battle. And again, from watching my brave and courageous wife deal with this every single day, I know what it's like. And again, we've got a lot of football players that play with this. Mark Andrews, Noah Gray, Blake Ferguson of the Dolphins, Chad Mumma of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And when my wife had a chance to meet with a couple of them, you know, she has to plan her day because of the type 1. She's amazed that they can play a football game, which lends even more credibility and respect to the job that they do.
Now, when your wife got type 1, was she very, very young, or did it present itself later in life?
Yeah, well, if you guys remember, she lost her husband on 9/11.
Yes.
And it is an autoimmune disease, and it can be stress-related, so you never know for sure, right? But because it is autoimmune and because it can be induced by stress, she obviously went through a lot of stress having lost her husband, having a one-year-old child at the time, and a year after 9/11, she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
All right, so people get checked out. That's the most important thing. That's why Adam's talking today. Get checked out.
Why do you think people are hesitant to get screened and check out that they have it? Just the fear of finding out officially they have it, or is it something that steers them away from wanting to get checked?
Yeah, I think that's probably it, Dom. Basically, you don't want to know what you don't have. It's like kind of going to the doctor for a physical. It's just easier to put it off. And sometimes in this particular, it is so much better to get ahead of it when there are blood tests that can detect type 1 before there are any noticeable symptoms that arise, before insulin's required, before any serious complications occur. You can screen early. And, you know, again, you know, my wife and I, you know, she's lived this on a daily basis, but I've watched it. I've had a up close seat to it. And all I can tell you is if you can get out in front of it, you're much better served to do that, which is why we want people to go to the onepledge.com today.
All right. Now, and what it will be the most awkward transition of all time, the mundane aspect of the Jets and the Giants.
Yes.
Do you think either of these two teams are in for quarterback? I mean, the way we look at it, the Giants look like they would be. I think the Jets probably just want to get Aaron Rodgers what they could get him to help win right now. What's your feeling? What are you hearing?
You know, to me, both teams are in a similar position. Do I think that each one of them will address the quarterback position at some point in the draft? I do. Do I think the Giants are going to go and use the sixth overall pick on arguably the fourth quarterback at that time when you'll have a chance to get one or two of the top wide receivers, one or two of the top offensive line? I in the end, I would guess today, a couple of weeks out, that that's not what they do. Now, look, these things shift. They change. They're fluid all the time. But if you're asking me today, 17 days out of the draft, what the Giants do at six, I would say non-quarterback. That's my belief. Now, we'll see how it actually unfolds. I don't think the Jets are going quarterback at 10. Do I think the Giants would go quarterback as early as round two for the right guy? I do, depending on who's there. And it's just a question of where the value meets your pick. At that point in time, maybe this draft comes and goes without them taking a quarterback. In a perfect world, I think that they'd like to get one. I would also guess that it's not at six. They could send out all the noise and smoke screens and do all the work they want to make people believe that they want to try to trade up to six so that if they can't trade up to Arizona at four or the Chargers at five, maybe the Giants are a pivot point at six. But again, if you're four, five, or six, are you prepared to bid farewell to Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, players like that to move back
right
for compensation? Yes, But again, it's going to take a lot. The acquiring team's going to have to give up a lot. There's a lot that has to happen, not to say it can't. But my guess would be that the Giants take a wide receiver or an offensive lineman.
Now, either of these wide receivers, whether it's Harrison Jr. or Neighbors, are they enough to elevate whoever your quarterback is? Or do you run the risk of maybe having this kid die on the vine as you're waiting for your quarterback to develop or get them in the first place?
Well, what I would say is this, that these guys are viewed as transcendent wide receiver talents. Like, these guys are highly respected in the personnel community. And I just think, you know, if we think back to the types of seasons that great rookie wide receivers have had, we've seen rookie wide receivers come in and make a difference for any quarterback. And there are people out there who believe that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one wideout in this draft. And there are people who believe that Malik Nabers is better than Marvin Harrison and is the number one wideout. It's really a question of what you want. You know, Marvin Harrison is a little bit like, you know, Larry Fitzgerald. Malik Nabers, 6 foot, 200 pounds, runs a 4.35 40, really, really fast. A stick of dynamite is the way he's been described. Tyreek Hill-like is the way he's been described. And if you had a chance to get somebody like that, then, you know, that's awfully attractive, and that can make any quarterback, Daniel Jones, Aaron Rodgers, Michael Kay, Don LaGreca, anybody look better than they actually are. So we'll see where they go, but these guys are going to go high and have a chance to make an impact in their rookie years.
Adam, talking to Adam Schefter here on the Michael Kay Show.
Sorry, Michael. Yeah, Adam, how are you observing the conversation around the Jets this year? Is there a belief in this league that they will be a competitive football team next year? Or do people sort of think, same old Jets, it's not going to work out one way or another?
Well, could it be both, Peter? Could it be that it's a little bit of both? If we go back to a year ago when they traded for Rodgers, there was a lot of Jets excitement. There was a lot of Jets hysteria. They could be back. They could be going to the playoffs. I thought that they would be vastly improved with Aaron Rodgers. And four plays in, obviously, we know what happened. Blows out his Achilles, end of the season, and we never got to see what it was like. But go and look at all the players that they brought in. Tyron Smith, Mike Williams, Morgan Moses, John Simpson, Tyrod Taylor, Hassan Reddick, Isaiah Oliver, like Javon Kinlaw. They added a lot of talent to what was a good team. Now, are there injury question marks? 100%. Do we know that Tyron Smith can make it through a season? We don't. Do we know Mike Williams is going to be ready to start the season and be able to be healthy? We don't. There are a lot of question marks. And sometimes it feels like with the Jets, okay, well, what's going to go wrong? I remember with Mike Williams signing, one of my Jeff friend's buddies texted me, oh, yeah, Tyron Smith is going to fall on him the first day of practice, and something's going to go wrong. Like, that's just how Jet fans have been conditioned to think. But the flip side to that is this. If, and it's a big if these guys can stay healthy, if they could stay on the field, if a 40-year-old quarterback can get through 17 games, it's tantalizing to think what it could be like. We just don't know that any of these guys with injury histories, coming off significant injuries like ACLs or Achilles or whatever it may be, we don't know that they're going to be able to stay on the field if they can. If you told me today all those guys are healthy, I would say the Jets will be able to play with anybody in the AFC. But I don't know that all those guys are going to be able to stay healthy. It's asking a lot. And not to be all negative, but with the history of that team, you just feel like somebody's waiting to pull the carpet out from underneath you. You just feel that way.
Now, it seems like the music has stopped for the Jets in terms of dealing Zach Wilson. Everybody seems like they have their backup quarterback. Adam, is there any way they just keep him, or are they going to be forced to release him?
No, I think in the end they'll trade him. I think it might take some time for a lot of reasons. Look, it's really not hard to come up with this value. We saw Mac Jones go for a 6. We saw Justin Fields go for a 6. And I think we all would agree that Zach Wilson hasn't accomplished quite as much as Mac Jones or Justin Fields accomplished. The issue really here is that there's about $4.2 million worth of money on that contract. So we could come up with a 7th round pick right now and just say, okay, it's a 7. Or we're flipping picks, whatever it may be. The question is, what are we going to do about that money? It's $4.2 million. Jets aren't going to want to pay it. New team's not going to want to pay it. Jets are going to hold out till some team pays some of that money. Other teams are going to say, hey, you're not going to carry him. You're going to have to release him. We'll give you something now. So I think we get an inflection point at the draft, you know, when there'll be some guy in round 6 or 7 sitting there that the Jets want. Okay, we got to make this happen right now for Zach Wilson, if not before, where, okay, how are we divvying up the money? Because that's what it comes down to in the end to me, really. It's not about the value they're getting back. It's about the $4.2 million as much as it is anything else.
If everybody stays healthy, are the Jets better than the Bills?
Is Aaron Rodgers healthy for 17 games? Yes. Tyron Smith healthy for 17 games? Mike Williams healthy for 17? Yeah, I'll take the Jets. If everybody's healthy, give me the Jets.
Before we let you go, Adam, all the quarterbacks, I read some stories today that Drake May, Merrill Hodge came out and said anybody who drafts Drake May is going to lose their job. You know, he's that sort of talent. Is he dropping? Is J.J. McCarthy moving up into the top three? What's your take on the quarterbacks coming out?
I don't think Drake May is dropping. Now, let me say this. What's interesting is, on a regular basis, there's always a quarterback that we talk about going high, whether it's Geno Smith the year he came out. Remember, he was left in the green room until the second day. Mm-hmm. Or last year, we talked about Will Levis going in the top 10 picks. He went day 2 to Tennessee. Do I think Drake May is going to fall this year? No chance. I don't believe that. And I'll tell you why. Because his high school coach was Josh McCown. So there are 3 teams at the top of the draft: Bears, Commanders, Patriots, that I would anticipate taking quarterbacks. Vikings, Raiders, Broncos, also in the quarterback market. There's a group of other teams that people aren't talking about that I also believe are in the quarterback market. How many of those teams is Drake May realistically going to get past? Not enough to slide that far. And if I had to bet today, and again, we'll see, 17 days left, a lot changes, my hunch and guess still would be that he goes number 3, Drake May to New England. But there's a lot of time that's left. I'm sure he has his detractors, just as he's got his supporters, just as a lot of these prospects do. So, look, we are in the picking apart time of the year where these front offices can find something wrong with just about anybody, even Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers. So are people going to find something wrong with Drake May? Of course. Is he going to slide? Maybe a little. Is he going to be a first-round pick? I'd be shocked if he weren't.
And J.J. McCarthy?
Also a 1. And probably, I can't imagine he gets past Minnesota's turn. What are they, number 11? And so J.J. to me could go as high as, say, 3 and could go no lower than 11. So 3 to 11. And by the way, I would put Drake May in the same category in that range. J.J. is somebody, you know, I'm personally a little proud of this as a Michigan guy. You know, when I was on this text chain with my college buddies and I told them Jim Harbaugh was going to the NFL and they were in denial about it, they're like, well, at least we won't lose JJ. I'm like, well, he's going to the NFL too. And one of my college buddies in that text chain said, well, why is he going when he's going to be a mid-round pick? I'm like, he's not going to be a mid-round pick. He's going to be a 1. No way he's going to be a 1. What do you want to bet? Well, we have dinner riding for my entire Michigan text chain friends, J.J. McCarthy going in round 1, and I feel very confident that we'll be going out for a nice steak dinner, maybe somewhere in New York City, compliments of J.J. McCarthy being a first-round draft pick.
All right, Adam, one more time. Everybody should screen for diabetes 1. Tell us again what they should do and what they should look into.
Yeah, it's the One Pledge movement. Thank you for asking, Michael. More information is at theonepledge.com. We want people to visit their doctors, be screened for type 1 diabetes, order a blood test that can detect type 1 diabetes, doctors to discuss the results, come up with a care plan if you have it, but go to theonepledge.com for more information. Thank you very much for asking. Much appreciated.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for coming on, Adam. Hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That is Adam Schefter. We'll take some phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. Hey, to hit a home run, everything needs to line up perfectly, no different than finding the person you want to marry. When the time comes to propose, well, do what I did. Visit the engagement experts at London Jewelers. They'll make shopping for a ring easy and help you hit it out of the park. Let them help you pick or design the perfect ring to fit any budget from their 2 by London collection. London Jewelers is committed to getting it just right. So visit London Jewelers today at any of their 7 locations, including the Americana Mall and the Mall at Short Hills. Mention I told you to stop by. Please do that, and you'll get the Michael K. treatment. They're great people.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
I take some pride. I think I know sports. I think I know a good player when I see it. I guess I'm going to be so wrong when it comes to J.J. McCarthy. Maybe it was just a case where Michigan ran the ball so well that they didn't want to put the ball in the air. I just don't see him being a first-round pick, but it looks like it's going to happen.
No, it's definitely going to happen. Now, is that out of the sheer desperation that that many teams need quarterbacks? Is it the system that he ran? Is it the pedigree? All I'll keep saying is, and because he didn't play for Michigan, but what did we think of Patrick Mahomes when he came out of the draft? Now, he was the 10th overall pick. He's clearly a generational quarterback that should have been the first pick overall, but he wasn't. Why? Because I guess it didn't translate college to the pros. These guys know the jump, and they must see something that goes beyond game tape, that goes beyond the combine, that they're willing to do it. Because I can't imagine a general manager just going to be like, I need a quarterback, so I'm just going to take whoever. That cost you your job.
But here's the thing about Mahomes, and I'm just talking about me, all right?
Right.
I didn't see Mahomes play. I didn't watch Texas Tech. I saw a lot of Michigan games, and I saw a guy who, you know, he's got a lot of winning in his pedigree, but he didn't win games with his arm. I mean, they didn't ask him to. So maybe the people in inside football see something I don't see. I don't see it.
Well, I mean, we don't see them. You know, like, what was Eli like in Ole Miss?
Right.
What was Russell Wilson like to go into the third round and be a borderline Hall of Famer? They know, Michael, but even they don't know. I can't imagine a general manager is going to take him just on the spec of, well, look what Tom Brady did. Like, it can't be that. They've got to see something. They're paid to see something. They get it wrong. But, you know, again, I want to pick on you, Michael, or even me. I mean, we can look at it, and we look at it with pedestrian eyes. We don't look at it with the same expertise that they do. So there's something they see in the footwork or the release or just how he reads defenses that they believe that will translate into being a really good NFL quarterback.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Hector in Queens. Hector.
Hey guys, how you doing? Love the show. Listen, I about Coach K about that early going to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that me and you guys view Kentucky at the same, because I grew up, I was born in 89, so Kentucky to me, before when John Calipari was hired, they were at the apex, but they've gone down. Like, I don't view them the same as you guys, because I don't know, I think there's an age difference here, so I don't know if that has something to do with it, but I just don't view Kentucky in the same light that you guys do.
What you're saying, Hector,
way is bigger than Kentucky.
But what's bigger than Kentucky?
I view Duke and North Carolina as way better programs than Kentucky.
Be better,
well, I mean, that's one of the reasons that Calipari's being forced out, because they think they're better than that.
Right. There's a history that it has nothing to do with how old we are, unless it's just that there's certain programs that resonate, and Kentucky resonates. And they go back farther than Duke does. Like, Duke became a thing when Coach K got there and all that, but Kentucky's, that's where it all kind of begins and ends for a lot of people. And so that will always be important, no matter how much they slide. I mean, the Yankees might have been bad, Michael, in the 60s, in the late 60s, and they might have been bad in the early 90s, but they were still the Yankees, and winning there was going to mean something big time. Not that winning in UConn is nothing, but winning in Kentucky, especially the fact that they've been bad for a little while, it's still one of those special programs. And if they can double his salary... Come on, you can't kill a guy if he at least thought about that, entertained it.
Let's go to Dan in New Jersey. Danny.
Hey, Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you guys?
Great. How are you doing?
So I have a few points I want to make. First, about the Yankees and DJ LeMahieu. If Oswaldo Cabrera continues to hit the way he does, I don't know how it's going to be as a sell to Yankee fans if DJ LeMahieu comes back and doesn't hit. And that being said, I have two more points. One, I don't think Jose Trevino should really be playing, and I think they were wrong. They probably should have kept Higashioka, as good as Trevino is defensively. He struggled on Friday, and he's going to give you basically nothing with the bat. And three, I think Anthony Volpe is the best shortstop in New York. It's 8 games in. He struggled his rookie year, but I just think that there's more there, and Volpe can do more. He's a better defender than Lindor. He won the Gold Glove last year, and I think he's going to be a better hitter this year. And by the end of the year, everyone's going to be saying it.
Well, I mean, that we'll hit on your last point, Dan, because that's certainly the most volatile. I mean, Anthony's 22, so and I think Lindor's 30. So, or 31. So you probably go with the 22-year-old, but it's still hard to say that Anthony's better than Francisco Lindor. Lindor's had an awful start, but you look at his numbers that he puts up every single year. I'm sorry. I love what Anthony Volpe's doing this year. You know, he struggled last year offensively, 209. I think there's a high upside. We know what Lindor's going to be. But at this point, Lindor's a better player, don't you think so, Don?
Yeah, but it's unfair to compare a guy that's been in the league for a decade to a guy that's been in the league for 1 year. Now, is he a better defender? He won the Gold Glove last year. Lindor's won two, so maybe he can end up being a better defender. Yeah, but right now you're talking about a guy that can hit 30 home runs, a guy that can, you know, drive in, 100 RBIs. I mean, is Volpe going to get to that point? Maybe, but we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, Lindor, even though he's grossly overpaid, he's a perennial all-star. He's won a Silver Slugger. He's won a couple of Gold Gloves. He's a perennial all-star. I mean, let me ask you this, Michael. If Volpe ended up being Lindor, would you be disappointed as a Yankee fan?
No. No. And also, if you're putting a team together, you probably take Volpe. He makes $1 million.
Yeah, but that's,
Lindor again, makes over 30.
Right. And again, I think he's overpaid, but that's not his fault.
Right.
You know, the fact is he's a guy that can hit 30 home runs, driving 100 RBIs. He's a lifetime 273 hitter. He has hit 300 in his career. And I think a Yankee fan would be very happy if he ended up putting up those numbers that Lindor's put up over the last decade.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.